26. Sigint. Cleaning Damien's flat becomes more of a project than she'd anticipated, but she keeps at it, trusting that manual labor and the effort required to stay on task somehow furthers soul retrieval. Several video cameras have been unpacked here, leaving the main room littered with abstract white foam shapes, innumerable foam peanuts, torn and crumpled shrink wrap, empty Ziploc bags, warranties, and instruction manuals. It looks as though a spoiled child has torn through a stack of very expensive presents, and she supposes that that might actually be seen to be the case, depending on how one looked at Damien. Beer bottles, a saucer serving as an impromptu ashtray for lipsticked Marlboros, dirty dishes with remains of the tandoori takeaway, a pair of very expensive-looking panties that she cheerfully bins, ditto various discarded makeup articles in the bathroom. She changes the sheets on the downstairs bed, straightens the giant oven mitt, dusts, and does a pass with a bright red upright German vacuum that's obviously never seen use before. Goes upstairs to see what needs to be done, and a big cartoon hammer of sheer exhaustion comes down on her, slamming her into the waiting softness of the futon. When she wakes, the phone is ringing downstairs, and the light outside is different. She looks at her watch and sees that it's 8 hours later. She hears the phone stop ringing, then start again. When she gets to it, it's Magda, asking if she'd like to have dinner. Expecting only Magda, she sees Wojtek and the large African as well when she reaches the agreed meeting point near the station. They all seem wonderfully cheerful to her, but she supposes that that's because they aren't lagged and don't have lives as complicated as hers has recently become. Ngemi, in particular, hugely zipped into his tight coat of black faux leather, is grinning enormously, and as they walk to a Greek restaurant somewhere behind the station, she hears why. He has sold the calculators she'd seen near Portobello to the expected representative of that same Japanese collector for what is evidently a very nice sum. He has the air of a man whose lost cause has most unexpectedly panned out, although at one point he does sigh hugely. "Now I must go to Pole and collect them from Hobbs." She remembers the unpleasant man with the filthy little car. "I don't like him," Magda says bluntly, and seems to case to be addressing mainly Wojtek. "He is a brilliant man," Wojtek responds, shrugging. "A horrid, drunken old spy." Attuned now to words like spy, Case notes this, but almost immediately forgets it. The restaurant they've chosen is a homey, quiet little Greek place that shows every sign of predating the Children's Crusade. With its white-painted walls, bits of Aegean blue, and utterly characteristic Greek tourist tat, it somehow reminds Case of the experience of being in a Chinese restaurant in Roanoke, Virginia. "I love your hair," Magda tells her, as Retsina is being poured, and she quite evidently does. "Did you have it cut in Tokyo?" "Thank you, I did. But you were only there for such a short time." "Yes, business." Case stifles a yawn that seems to come out of nowhere. "Excuse me. Are you still on their time? You must be exhausted." "I think I'm all on my own time now," Case says, "but I don't know what time that is." Ngemi brings up yen devaluation, as this might affect his business, and that leads into a conversation about a classmate of Magda's who's recently been hired as part of a team designing clothing for the characters in a new Japanese video game. Ngemi and Wojtek both find this slightly unbelievable, but Case assures them that it's utterly normal, that in fact it's a rapidly growing aspect of the design industry. "But they don't wear hats, these anime characters," Magda laments, pouring herself another glass of the resinous yellow wine, then wincing at its bite. "They all have haircuts exactly like yours." She's laced into a leather bodice in a color called Turbo Blue, more traditionally used for painting large pieces of electrical equipment in factories. Her eyeshadow matches. "Life is more difficult for the serious artist," allows Wojtek, who's seeming morose now. "Time is money, but also money is money." "You'll get your scaffolding," Magda says. "It will work out." She explains to Case that her brother, having assembled close to 300 ZX-81s, faces the daunting task of individually altering their cases to accept connections of some kind, each connection having to be painstakingly soldered into the actual Sinclair circuitry, such as it is. Wojtek listens keenly, taking an evident pleasure in hearing his sister recount the tribulations of the serious artist. He is creating, cases starting to gather, some sort of lungfish primitive connection machine. He draws it on a napkin for her, a representation of a three-dimensional grid, this to be made up from a batch of third-hand builder's scaffolding that Ngemi has located in Bermondsey. She watches the lines of ink spread into the paper, widening, and thinks of Taki in the little bar in Roppongi. It is very rusty, paint-spattered scaffolding, Ngemi has assured him, exactly what he wants for the texture of the piece. But if he's to do each Sinclair modification himself, he faces weeks, if not months, of work. The scaffolding is not expensive, but neither is it free, and must be transported, measured, sawed, assembled, probably resawed, then assembled again, then stored somewhere until a gallery can be secured. "A patron must be found," he says. Case thinks of Billy Pryan, but restrains herself from saying that she'd seen him in Tokyo and knows he's currently busy. "When you met us," Ngemi says to Case, "it seemed that Wojtek's funding problems were about to be alleviated. But alas, no, not as it worked out." "How was that?" Case asks, with the intimation that she herself is being set up for a potential role as patron. "Neither Hobbs nor I had anything sufficiently special to interest our Japanese collector on its own. But by combining available stock, we could employ the psychology of the lot. Collectors behave differently, then. Konvolut, the German word for auction lot. I like this word. Collectors approach it differently, become tangled in it. They want to believe there is hidden treasure there." He smiles, his dark and shaven head glinting with reflected candlelight. "If the sale had gone through, it was my intention to advance Wojtek what he needs for the scaffolding." "But didn't you say that it had all worked out?" Case asks. "In the meantime?" "Yes," says Ngemi, with quiet pride. "But now I am negotiating to buy Stephen King's Wang." Casey stares at him. "The provenance," Ngemi assures her, "is immaculate, the price high, but I believe reasonable. A huge thing, one of the early dedicated word processors. Shipping alone will require the funds I had earmarked for the scaffolding and more." Case nods. "And now I must deal with Hobbs Baranoff," Ngemi continues, less happily, "and he is in one of his moods." "If he hadn't been when I saw him," Case thinks, "I wouldn't want to see him when he was." "Hobbs wanted his share of the Curtis sale in order to bid on a very rare piece that went up for auction in Den Haag this past Wednesday, a factory prototype of the earliest Curtis, exhibiting a peculiar, possibly unique variation in the mechanism. It went to a Bond Street dealer instead, and for not a bad price. Hobbs will be difficult when I see him."
"But you've sold his as well, haven't you?"
"Yes, but once anything's in Bond Street, it's beyond the reach of mere mortals. Even Hobbs, Baranoff, too dear."
Magda, who's been working her way through the retsina a little more determinedly than the rest of them, makes a bitter face. "This man is appalling. You should have nothing to do with him. If that is what American spies are like, they are worse even than the Russians they defeated."
"He was never a spy," Ngemi says somberly, lowering his glass. "A cryptographer, a mathematician. If the Americans were as heartless or as efficient as people imagine them, they would never leave poor Hobbs to drink himself to death in a leaking caravan."
Case, feeling neither particularly heartless nor very efficient, asks, "What would they do then if they were?" Ngemi, about to put a forkful of the remaining calamari into his mouth, pauses.
"I suppose," he says, "they would kill him."
Case, having been raised to some extent within the ghostly, yet in her experience, remarkably banal membrane of the American intelligence community, has her own set of likelihood filters when it comes to these things. Wynne had never, as far as she knew, been an intelligence officer in his own right, but he had known and worked with them. He had shared a certain experiential core with them,
partaking in his own way of the secret world and its wars. And very little Case ever hears of that world, as described by those with even less a sense of it than her own, sounds like anything but fantasy. Actually, she tells them, it's sort of traditional to let them drink themselves to death. Something about her tone stops the conversation, which she hadn't intended. What did you mean in a caravan? She asks Ngemi, to end the silence. Wynne had lived long enough to bury a number of his colleagues, none of them, as far as she knew, felled by anything more sinister than stress and overwork, and perhaps by a species of depression engendered by too long and too closely observing the human soul from certain predictable, but basically unnatural angles.
He lives in a little trailer, Ngemi says. Squats, really, near pool.
But he has a bloody pension from the CIA, protests Magda. I don't believe this caravan, and he buys those Kota things. They cost fortunes. He's hiding something, secrets.
Drinking deep of her retsina.
NSA, Ngemi corrects her. Disability pension, I imagine, though I'd certainly never ask him. He has perhaps £10,000 in net worth, I believe. Most of it at any given time in calculators. No fortune. Not even enough to keep them, really. A collector he must buy, but a poor man he must sell.
Ngemi sighs.
It is that way for many people, not least myself.
But Magda isn't having it. He's a spy. He sells secrets. Wojtek told me.
Flustered, her brother looks from Case to Ngemi, back to Case.
Not a spy. Not government secrets. You should not say this, Magda.
Then what does he sell? Case asks.
Sometimes,
Wojtek says, lowering his voice slightly,
I think he locates information for people.
He's a spy, declares Magda gleefully.
Wojtek winces.
He perhaps has retained certain connections, Ngemi qualifies, and can find certain things out. I imagine there are men in the city.
His wide black brow creases with seriousness.
Nothing illegal, one hopes. Old boy networks are something one understands here. One doesn't ask. We assume Hobbs has his own still.
Sig Int, Magda says triumphantly. Wojtek says he sells Sig Int.
Wojtek stares gloomily at his glass. Sig Int, Case knows. Signals intelligence.
She decides to change the subject.
Whatever this is about, it's detracting from what pleasure she's able to take in the evening. After leaving the restaurant, they stop at a crowded pub near the station. Case, remembering from college that retsina is not a good mix with any other species of alcohol, orders a half shandy and leaves most of it, sensing that the patronage hustle is probably about to be more overtly launched in her direction. She opts for preemptive action.
I hope you find a backer soon, Wojtek. I'm sure you will. It makes me wish I had that sort of money myself, but I don't.
As she'd somehow expected, they all glance at one another. It's Ngemi who decides to have a shot.
Is your employer perhaps in a position to...
I couldn't ask. Haven't been there long enough. Thinking, however, not of Bijan but of his credit card in her wallet, she could indeed buy Wojtek's load of rusty scaffolding for him.
She will, she decides, if it looks like nothing else is going to turn up. Let Dorothea's Russians,
who she isn't quite sure she believes in, figure that one out.